Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Seems good. Let's get this rolling. What's going on, everybody? Patrick Bear here, and we're back again. It is time for a microsode. I'm being joined on the East Coast by BJ.
Hi.
I was like, hey, you still there? On the West Coast by Brian.
Hello.
And we are convening to put out this very timely microsode just in time for the premiere of Thor: Love and Thunder. don't go behind. It's okay. There, you know what? This is a good like problem to have. There's been so much stuff that we wanted to talk about that this kind of got put on the back burner, and we're just getting around to talking about it now. And you know, there are still Disney Plus shows that we haven't even done a deep dive on. Like, we're going to have to like double up on some of our recordings and get this content out because the fans are clamoring for our hot takes.
Are we getting DMs that are suggesting that we should be spelunking deeper into the Marvel MCU and or attached picks to motivate us? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I would take like deep picks about anything Marvel,
girl,
so that works.
Girl, you give that shit away. What are you talking about?
I mean, for me, I'm willing to give it all out there. Like, uh-huh. I have no problem promoting myself because if it's not in the window, nobody's going to buy it. So, but yes, I need
you
people
also
to
have pick. To put a for sale sign. You have to put like the information. You're just putting it up in the window. And the people just walking by and seeing.
I want
they
people
don't know
to go
how
to the
to
website.
Purchase.
I don't want them to come into the store. That's too intimate. I need them to go to the website, text me, go to the Etsy. Like, I don't know. Don't walk in. I'll just start crying if that happened.
We're like a minute into this, and it instantly is making me think of a tweet that Joel sent out today, where he said that he loves how off the rails conversations on podcasts go when two queers are involved. And I was like, are you trying to read us? And then remembered he also has a podcast. So I think he's also talking about himself. So
I think I would dare say Joel has been well steeped in our nonsensical set, non sequiturs, or not non sequiturs,
oh, yeah,
or whatever. Branching, yes. Multiversal conversations.
Exactly. Everything all in one place at sometimes. parentheses 2025.
Oh my god.
Well, that is a little bit of a hint going back to the topic at hand. We are going to talk about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, aka why Wanda did what she did, and she wasn't so wrong about it.
It's mom. It's Doctor Strange mom.
Damn those moguls in media.
I was going to say, wait for you. Which, by the way, because we just can't stop talking about that particular network and show, it did not occur to me, or maybe it did and I forgot because I'm old, that is WoW Upside Down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where it started.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like any other, the only other, like Katya and Trixie get called mom a lot. Like, I don't, I love the two of them. I'm not that like deep into the fandom because most of it's like 12-year-old girls and also a little weird. Not to say that those two queens aren't weird themselves. However, I was never really a big part of like that old fandom that deep. So I don't know where the whole mom thing comes from. But so when Alaska and Willem and Dipper and all them were creating the moguls in media, I was like, oh, okay, this is a WoW thing. And I kind of love it.
It's epic. I'm getting caught up on all their recent Au Courant and Hot Goss episodes as I fly across this country many times over recently. And yes, it's a delight. If you're not listening to it, you're missing half of our references at least.
Au Courant. Yes. I mean, we just keep talking about him a lot because the real game plan is to try to get the show on the Mom Network. We want to be the first non-famous drag queens on the Mom Network.
Not non-famous. I mean, do we qualify as drag queens? I know both of y'all have done it.
I was gonna say most of annually? Us have done it yeesh.
Annually.
I used to do it annually. I used to do it annually. I have not in a hot minute.
The internet's most popular annual drag queen.
Oh. Leona, yeah, I can't speak. Leona has only come out once, but this past Pride, I did do a half face for Pride, so that was a half Leona. I know it was literally lips,
horizontal,
eyeshadow,
vertical.
Okay. It was like that Star Trek classic episode with the Frank Gorshin. No, it was it was lips, eye, mascara, and beard dye. Of course, the beard, they got to color the beard.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm trolling my parents right now on Facebook, really my mom, to see if she notices and gives me a hard time. I'm kind of waiting for that call.
Oh.
But you got to be like, eh, been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. some madness happened. And I'm not just talking about this country's politics.
Let's save that for your new spin-off series.
We should ask the listeners, do you want us to do a deep dive into political discussions and culture in this country? If you do, let us know.
I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing.
The first time you've done it.
I just feel like we definitely need to, like, I know we're going to go off the rails, like, not really go off the rails. We're going to fall headlong into full-on rage. So we just need to focus our rage on one topic per episode. We're mad about this thing, but we're mad about all the things. Just so you know.
July is Wrath Month, so it would be a perfect time.
Right?
I was like, when did we go back to Pride? We took Pride away and made it Wrath like 2 years ago. We still have, like, when did we go back? I'm still in Wrath.
cognitive dissonance. That's kind of my.
I think that's it. Once you let the gays out of the house, and they were like, "Yeah,
somebody put up a hex." and then they're just like, "Man, I'm so angry." But we're here at Pride. I thought you were happy. Oh, that's the hard part, is the lying. And then they just like turn their hands, and everything's on fire. Like.
That's the best reveal in a movie I've seen in a long time.
Oh, my God.
Yes. All right. So let's get this train back on the tracks of the topic for this episode. So we are talking Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It's a 2022 American superhero film based on Marvel Comics featuring the character Doctor Strange. It's produced by Marvel Studios and distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. It's the sequel to Doctor Strange 2016 and the 28th film, goddamn, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the MCU. The film was directed by Sam Raimi, it's written by Michael Waldron, and stars Benedict Cumberbatch as Stephen Strange, alongside Elizabeth Olsen, Chiwetel Ejiofor, I can never say his name right, and I hope I got it close. At least close enough to not like make people mad at me. Benedict Wong. Oh fuck! I know how to say like I looked up how to say her name properly.
Xochitl Gomez.
Is it so?
Xochitl Gomez. Yes, Xochitl. See, now that I'm thinking about it, it's harder to do it.
Right? Yeah, as soon as you start thinking, the pronunciation goes out the window. Because I want to say Xochitl, because I know in Portuguese, the X is a ch sound, but I know that it's not. Like, it's a Mayan derivation, so it changes.
No, it's Xochitl Gomez.
Xochitl. She's so chill. That was horrible. I'm sorry, everybody. Michael Stuhlbarg and Rachel McAdams. In the film, Strange protects America Chavez, Gomez, a teenager capable of traveling the multiverse from Wanda Maximoff.
For a second, I thought you said
we are going to take this title the way that we have been doing most of our deep dives. We are going to start with the positives. And I know BJ is a big horror fan. I know this straddles the line. I know I see people on the internet being like, oh my god, such a great horror film. And some people are like, this is not horror. I mean, it was scary as shit in parts for me. So, like, I'm not a big horror person. So, for me, it did have horror moments, for sure. But we'll take on the things that we liked. We'll do a round of things that maybe could have been improved. And then maybe some wild conjecture and speculation for the characters, the stories, and Phase 4 in general. Because when this comes out, we're a week behind on this episode. When this episode comes out, our 29th film, Thor: Love and Thunder, will be premiering to a worldwide audience. So I don't think there is any place better to start than with the man-child who is bursting at the seams to discuss the things that he enjoyed. BJ, why don't you kick off the discussion of things that we liked from this film?
Oh, my God. First of all, I'm a massive Sam Raimi fan.
From Canada's Drag Race Season 3?
I mean,
by the way, best drag name in a long time on Drag Race, any franchise, Irma Gerd.
All I can think of is the Irma Gerd Goosebumps meme from a couple years ago.
I'm pretty sure that's where she got her drag name from. But anyway, let's take that. I derailed that train again. Train back on the tracks. And carry on. What did you like about the movie? I'm sorry.
So I'm a massive Sam Raimi fan. I've lost track of how many times I've watched Army of Darkness, Evil Dead. Ash vs. the Evil Dead was like my moment of zen. Just everything about it. And plus, Doctor Strange as a story thrives for me when it's a dark fantasy. And I will say, as a massive horror fan, This was a Sam Raimi camp fest in some spots. So I absolutely love the fact that they did go darker. I remember there was a lot of conjecture about the first Doctor Strange movie and whether or not it was going to be a horror movie. So them actually making good on that promise, and in some places it worked fantastic, some places it didn't work super hot. But like I said, Doctor Strange thrives when it, at the very least, it's a dark fantasy, because Jason Aaron, Doctor Strange, that run, they pulled pretty heavily from some elements from that. So they pulled from my favorite Doctor Strange run. You have the horror elements. They did not pull punches with Wanda, and that was exactly what I was wanting. I know it's very controversial right now, but Pat, did you ever read Trial of Magneto? Boy.
I forgot that was a prerequisite before we did this episode. I think I have two more issues. They weren't in the app like 3 months ago when I went to read them, and then I never went back. I'm so far behind on my comics. Like, they're talking about titles that,
oh yeah,
yeah, just I, like Knights of X and like all of these books that I'm like, I'm so far, I am still in the Hickman era of comics.
Honestly,
how far behind I am.
Stay there.
Okay, I will do you a solid. In In Wanda's publication history, there has not been many moments where she has been like, I am doing this thing of my own volition, powers be damned, outside influence be damned. The Darkhold in the comics is definitely a corruptive force. However, in the movies, they just make it they just make it like it's your toxic friend. That's like, yeah, that's a great idea. Just go ahead and do that. Like, like you have more station with the Darkhold than you do in the MCU than you do in the comics. I feel like they definitely gave her more station outside of her powers, outside of her grief. She definitely is still feeling the effects of her grief, and they just continued it on naturally from where they left her off on WandaVision. And I think her character's the better for it, because like I said, 90% in her publication history is Wanda's powers are out of control and she's crazy. So giving her kind of that station to make a bad choice, and to do a wonderful parallel between her and Steven. I am very much on the train after this movie. Mordo is correct. He is not wrong. He may be going about doing it a shitty way, but he is correct. He's technically correct. The best kind of correct. The only other time in Wanda's publication history, there might be one other time I'm missing and maybe a story I haven't read, but is Trial of Magneto and what she is doing in that story. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So definitely, for those of you that haven't read Trial of Magneto, it is central, front and center, it is a Wanda story in relation to the mutants and her relation to Magneto. And it has a beautiful end, and it kind of breaks the cycle of Wanda just being the crazy one with lots of power. So it had kind of a sad ending. And honestly, I feel like most MCU movies, they kind of had needed a more realistic, a more sad ending. That's that 100%. Like half the audience went, oh. And I'm like, yeah, no, you fucked up. You know, it's, and it had a very, it didn't have the standard, it had like an action-packed third act, but nowhere near as much as the previous acts. And I actually, I love Miss Marvel. I'm very excited what they're planning on doing with her, and I'm going to stop so we can
America
jump.
Chavez?
Huh?
America Chavez? You said Miss Marvel.
Oh,
I was like, wait a minute.
There's too much. Yes, America Chavez. America Chavez, I was worried that they did at the start. In Act 1, I was worried they were going to make her a little bit soft-hearted because she is a force to be reckoned with from day one in the comics and has no problem laying out a fucking child if she needs to. I'm glad we got to see her vulnerable a little bit. And then we went straight into, I'm going to punch you with the multiverse in your face, America Chavez, which was great. So I'm very interested. I'm very interested in seeing where they go with her. And I'm very interested in seeing any of the future plans they have with her. And honestly, and the thing about a Sam Raimi movie is they're not without flaws and they're not without dialogue issues, but Wanda's dialogue in this movie will sustain me through the darkest of times. My rage takes on her face saying even now, this is me being reasonable. Like, I love it. Visuals were knocked it out of the park. A lot of my complaints are going to be I wanted more of certain things. And the Illuminati fucked around and they found out, as they should. Like their publication history.
For sure, yeah. Fuck around and find out definitely is the motto for the Illuminati in this film. Brian, what were your thoughts? What were some positive takeaways from the mom film?
I think that I loved America Chavez, and having been a big fan of the Young Avengers, right? Young Avengers.
Yeah.
And But she wasn't in that originally, right? They added her when Kieran Gillen took it over, I believe.
Yes, she was. I guess you could say she was part of the second generation team.
Yeah, that's it. Because I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. You know, she's a fascinating character. I love that they had her two moms in there. I really enjoy Benedict Cumberbatch in everything he does. I think there are things we'll talk about in the next section that are whatever, but overall, very entertaining. Of course, you know, I am not the biggest Scarlet Witch fan of the show. I think that's still reserved for Oral. I mean, yeah, but she had an arc, a little short, but you know, it was a thing. I mean, as far as like, anyway, we'll talk that. God, what else did I love? Wong. I love Wong. Wong, because I think they have done such a great upgrade to that character from what he is in the comics as the sort yes. of manservant, you know, to this very empowered, kick-ass Sorcerer Supreme. Just, you know, can't get enough Wong in my life. I love the music. Danny Elfman and Sam Raimi are always a great combo. I do love the Sam Raimi-isms that you see in the movie. Oh, yeah. Those were very appreciated. And, you know, this movie could have been something else entirely if it had gone forward with its original director and original plan and everything. But it was nice to see Raimi-isms in movies and in superhero films, because I think they do pair well. Horror film, you know, after an old timey, fashion, like, yeah, sure. It's got horror touches, but, I don't know. It was weird. There's a lot of things that I was like not sure about. So those are my positives. I'm probably missing something that'll come out in the other discussion, but yes, those are what I enjoyed in this film.
Okay. Short list on your part. It's been a little bit since I've seen it. Obviously, I was planning on revisiting the movie. I did not get a chance to, so I'm really just trying to draw on the things that moved me enough to remember them. The strange, dark, strange, corrupted, strange fight. I am surprised that you did not mention this, Brian, being the music person on this episode.
Okay. Yeah.
That fight with the music notes was beautiful.
Gorgeous.
It was done so well, and just I don't even know how to describe it. Like I fell in love with that fight scene. I normally don't really give a shit about fight scenes in most of these movies, because superhero films, MCU films especially, I mean, I don't want to say especially, because the DC films, it's pretty much the same thing. It's what comics are based off of. It's same versus same. That is how the comics are written. Most characters have an adversary that is the same power set as them, just evil. And it's a lot of laser blast, phase through, all of this. This was a little bit different because technically it is the same character, not even a character with the same power set. It's just it's a Stephen Strange from a different multiverse who has been corrupted by the Darkhold, who's read the Darkhold for so long at this point. He's on an Earth that is in the middle of an incursion, or has been in the middle of an incursion for a while. I didn't think the incursions lasted this long, but apparently this one did. And they do battle with music notes, and it's scored, and it's, you know, the notes that are being flung are also being played. I'm assuming, I'm not the music person on this one. I like lyrics, music itself escapes me. But the way that it was shot and the way that it was done, and then creating the staffs and having the notes like stick to it and then being flung back and the colors changing as they were being used, I thought that was phenomenal. Like, that was huge. Another major thing that just made me so happy, we all knew it was going to happen. But when Patrick Stewart came out as Charles Xavier, mind you, and this is the thing, this is what I don't think people 100%, I mean, I haven't really gone back in and I try to stay away from comments on the internet because there's just a lot of dumb people out there. But this isn't the Patrick Stewart, Charles Xavier of the X-Men Fox movies.
No.
This is the 1990s cartoon Xavier in real life, essentially. Mm-hmm. Because it outfit, the turtleneck, the gold hover chair, this is all 90s. 97. No, well, so the new cartoon that's coming out is X-Men 97, but it was what, 92 or 94?
Oh, when it started.
Yeah, I think it was 92. But this is because X-Men 91 was the start of the Jim Lee era, and that's where these cartoon characters really were based out of.
Yeah, it's 92. You're right.
Okay, cool. Well, listen, see, I have facts in my head.
And when when he came out, they played the scene.
Nope. Shh, 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 shh. You had your turn. This is my moment, and this is exactly why I'm saying this. That's exactly why I'm pointing that out. Is because. Intercut in the music was the goddamn theme song from the cartoon. When that started playing, I went with a friend of mine, and I grabbed his leg and was just like, oh my god, like I got so excited because as soon as you hear it's over, it's done. And this was such a great little segue for the Disney owned Marvel to be able to roll or hover its way into X-Men 97, which is coming, because at this point we know mutants will eventually show up. Obviously they already have technically now, but the X-Men themselves, or mutants as the film is apparently titled, which, you know, that will change before it's actually a film, they're not going to be around for a little while. I know I keep seeing things about, you know, there being another 5+ years before we see anything with X-Men in them. Or a standalone project, I should say, because I'm sure that these characters will eventually permeate into the world in other projects. And we're getting Deadpool, but whatever. But when that happened, that was amazing for me. I went into this very blind, so I did not expect Reed Richards to pop out from a little dimensional rift, whatever he was teleporting in through. And then the thing that really got me is I was like, okay, John Krasinski is as Reed Richards. That's pretty fucking cool. When Blackagar Boltagon walked out with that pitchfork on his forehead, I lost it. I loved it. I was living. If bitch, you know that if Lockjaw had popped up next to him, or if Lockjaw had teleported him in, I'd have been on the floor rolling like it was an episode of Jerry Springer or Maury Povich, and somebody just told me that this person was not the father. Like, I would have been rolling down the damn aisle in the movie theater. It would have been over for me.
Missed opportunity right there.
Yeah.
Seriously. I know that there's a lot of, and we may talk about this in the next section. There is potential talk of the fact that there wasn't enough forward queerness about America, but having the Progress Pride flag pin, having Love is Love or Amor es Amor on her jacket. I know that it's not a lot, but we had this discussion on one of our last, I think our last roundup. Representation at all is huge, as it's, you know, maybe sometimes the steps are a little too small, but to see these things really starting to become more standard in these films is fantastic. And obviously with as queer of a team as the Young Avengers are, it's going to have to be there. You know, I think, what is it? There's one cishet person on the team. Like, everybody else is some variation of queer or somewhere on the spectrum. I think there is one, because I think it was even America, like, kind of said, I see how you look at me, princess, and just, you know, like, kind of calling her out on that. So, you know, it's going to be there. Do we want more? Do we want there to be a larger presence of it? Yes, but it's still tugged on the heartstrings for me to see these types of things, to see her mom's in the memory bank flashback scene. I thought that was also a very interesting way of doing the exposition, because you know that there has to be an exposition dump because we've got to move the story forward. And I thought this was actually a pretty clever technique with them doing this, like, you know, save your memories, you know, store business that was in Earth 838, if I'm remembering numbers right. And I thought that was a cute way to get us that backstory without there having to be like some weird, hey, tell us your story type of moment. And almost kind of, it was exposition that was all of the stuff that they didn't want to deal with. And I thought that was an interesting way to give us information that almost kind of felt like the protagonist of the film did not want to share, but was necessary to continue the story moving forward. So those were some of the high points for me in the film. And I agree with what you all have already talked about. I'm not a big horror person, but a lot of the kind of like jump scary parts actually really worked for me. When crazy zombie-ish demon Wanda was chasing them in the underground and like kept popping around the corner whenever they thought they had lost her, I was like, can y'all just keep running? Like, close the doors behind you and just keep fucking running. If it's been a good 5 minutes and you haven't seen her, then you can stop. Like, it was just getting a little much. But I think it was shot very well when, like, there was the puddles in
on the
floor, and like her eye popped up, and like the mirror, like, yeah, it was really done very well in those respects from my point of view. So now that we've kind of talked a little bit about the things that we liked, let's talk about some of the things that could have been improved. Let's go around the other way, since you had a shorter list of things that maybe were on the positive side. Brian, kick us off on this topic of things that could have maybe been improved in the Multiverse of Madness.
Oh boy. No, I do agree with you though. The music section was interesting. I think one problem I had with it was a little cartoonish, given how sinister in fact they call it in the subtitles Sinister Strange. Which kind of, you see that in the subtitles before you even, or the captions before, like, you even know what their intent is, which is kind of like, oh, you're kind of giving it away there. But that's whatever. I don't know. There's so many things that bothered me. The first fight where they're fighting not Shuggoth Goroth, whatever, however you say his name, Shuggoroth, whatever.
Shumagoroth,
there it is. I don't know. It sounds like Lovecraftian bullshit, but...
That's why they can't call him Shumagoroth.
But it's
Conan, right?
Or yeah. Oh no, yeah. It's not Lovecraft, it's Conan. It's that stuff. Yeah. But it's So that's why. But there were some great moments. There were some not so great moments in that fight that if you're really paying attention and maybe, I don't know, you just happen to catch it, they didn't get the effects quite right for some of the ragdoll physics, and Strange and Wong look a little weird when they're being tugged around. It's again, not a huge thing, but you notice it and it kind of goes, oh gosh, guys, could have fixed that. So I mean, kind of wonder if that was like a late addition. I vaguely remember the first movie. I obviously remember Christine sort of. And I think that the, was that Dr. who is like a rival who sat with him in the, what you thought was a funeral and then you realize it was a wedding. That was like, I guess, the necessary continuity, but I didn't remember it at all. And again, see prior comment, I'm old. Moving her off the table in a good way, not killing her off, but yet finding an alternate version of Christine to sort of play a little bit of narrator, or not narrator, a little bit of exposition, a little bit of like, you know, moving the story along, whatever. That was nice. Again, don't care. Christine was never like a huge thing for me in the first movie, obviously, because I couldn't remember really much about her. And it clears the way for Klee, which I am very happy. That was probably one thing about the movie I loved, like unabashedly, is the mid-credit break. Was there an in-credits thing, or was it just the mid-credits?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, no, the Bruce Campbell Papa Pizza Papa.
Oh, man, I did. Okay, so I missed that. I got to go back. That was good, and I kind of thought it was funny that in every Sam Raimi movie, Bruce Campbell gets some great little physical comedy, and so, you know, even though he looks ancient, but I mean, I'm sure he was, you know, let's say aged up, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he just looks like that now. It was
kind of what he looks like.
Is it? Oh, geez. So old now. And they're doing more, by the way. I think they confirmed that he's coming back for yet another Evil Dead sequel. So that's
yes.
I mean, after the TV series, that was phenomenal. Anyway, so that was all good. Sam Raimi-ism is great. Oh, man, there's so many things. So Stephen Strange's hair sometimes looks ridiculous and like a wig. And I know it is a wig, but there were moments where like I was
the Stephen Strange's.
the main one
because all of them kind of look a little funny.
Yes, no, you're right. I did love the fact that they said 616. That was great, though. That does of course introduce some continuity confusion for people who had previously considered MCU not 616 and gave it its own number or whatever. But that's nerds, who cares.
Well, that was a Feige joke that everybody ran with.
Yeah.
Because it was what, like, supposed to be like Earth 9999 or 19999. It was the number of films that he expected to be in the total, like the grand total of films.
Yeah.
And then everybody just ran with that as the Earth designation. I will say, though, one of the things that does make that a little weird, it's great for the comic readers, but at the same time, almost all of this is a variation off of the Ultimate Universe, which isn't 616.
Right.
I mean, they did not go in the really gross Wanda Pietro Ultimates version. Because we don't talk about that one.
I feel like the Avengers, there was some stuff that they borrowed from the Ultimates, but they've gone well past that. So yeah, I feel like this is more like 616 in general. We're not even to the point where I really want to make a thing. So this is all just whatever, right?
This is all the light criticism.
The music thing. I think I said it was cartoonish. As someone who used to love the idea of having music powers and also loves Dazzler, I don't know. I like bringing those knights to life. It just felt very phantasmagoria. What's the Disney movie, BJ? The
Fantasia.
Fantasia. Wow, it was close. Fantasia-esque in that way, kind of like, you know, that sort of thing. And you know, appreciate any good music references, and that was all there. Boxcott and Fugue. I think they did there was another piece they referenced, but in the harp little coup de grace at the end. Like, all that's fine, and I guess I have to just let myself be a child again sometimes when I'm watching these movies. Because the child in me would have, you know, fucking loved it. But it just in that moment with the severity of the incursion, which also, by the way, I love that they did bring in the Hickman incursion idea, but in a very like, what does that actually do then? Cause this world seems messed up, but not like completely obliterated. So that was a little confusing. What else? I love the Illuminati, the X-Men stuff. You're absolutely right. I love the Fantastic Four, not even a reference. I mean, full on Mr. Fantastic. One of my favorite characters in Marvel in general. If John Krasinski doesn't get the call to be the real 616 Mr. Fantastic, I'm going to be very disappointed because he looks amazing. I love that he like campaigned for years and also the fan community campaigned for him and then they made that happen. Monica Rambeau, I believe. Is that who is Captain Atom or Captain Marvel, right?
Yeah, that was Monica Rambeau.
That was Maria Rambeau.
Maria Rambeau.
Is her mom.
Right. Her mom.
Right.
Love that reference. Love Monica specifically as a character. One of my favorite incarnations or whatever's of Captain Marvel. So that was cool. And of course, we didn't even say Captain America. What was it? Captain
Carter.
Captain Carter, like, love that. Love seeing her not only, you know, in that What If series, you know, featured very well, but also this. And it is funny seeing some of the stuff from the What If kind of cross pollinate into this as well. So one more thing I kind of said at the beginning, the reveal of Wanda both infuriates me as the heel turn, let's say, infuriates me, but also I did love the fact that if you go into this movie not knowing anything and all you've seen is the trailers, it is a fairly substantial misdirect in the trailers to what you get. And I do appreciate a good misdirect. I do appreciate a good reveal, as any fan of Drag Race will attest to. That turn when she's in the apple orchard and then she, you know, shows the whole thing. Like, all that, that's great. Having said that, I think the biggest thing I hated about this movie is what they did with Wanda. And I get it. It showed her in all her power as a Scarlet Witch. And I get that, you know, that arc that she's been on since WandaVision and you know, being missing her children and missing Vision and all of that, it does add into where she's at. I think the advancement of from the end of WandaVision into this, and now she's suddenly the Darkhold's Thrawn, but she's in control, which is also interesting because I really thought they were going to do a thing where they're like, oh, wait, once the Darkhold, you know, is you stab the book and she's back in control and she's not, it's not her agency. It was the book. No, it's her agency. She's just a horrible person and she's done horrible things all in the name of having her kids, which is true to the comics in a certain way because of, you know, WandaVision or not WandaVision, House of M. Get it, but still redeemable. And in this case, they had to
disassembled.
Give her... Oh, and sorry, you're right. Disassembled.
Yeah.
You're right. You're
yeah,
right.
Disassembled is really where a lot of that comes from.
Yeah. But
they made her redeemable. And I'm not saying I don't... We'll talk about this. In House of M, yes.
Yes.
By the end of House of M, they did.
The decimation? House of M ended with the decimation.
I believe, well, okay, so let's say not House of M itself, the after effects, she is redeemed, and I forgot
still
where they...
call her the Pretender.
Well, the mutants do. The mutants do, but she's had a lot of good heroic moments. She was in the, she was in Uncanny Avengers from, what's his name? What's,
yeah, I know.
Like, Pat, okay.
Reed Trout of Magneto.
I know. I need to
finish that too.
Both of you.
And this is the thing. Like, there is a bit, because obviously as things have changed in the comics, they've retconned and revisited. Because yes, you're essentially right. They separated her from the mutants, because obviously once you depower the majority, what was it,
132 million
or something like that.
No. Like, how many still had their powers? It was like it was like under 200 mutants still like kept their powers, and she decimated, because in one of the Hickman books, it had like, or I think Uncanny Avengers was Hickman also, wasn't it? But it had like how many mutants she depowered. It was like 16 million or billion. I don't know.
198 mutants left.
198. Okay, that was close. That was close. You were close. But they kind of kept her separated from the majority of them. And then once Hickman rebooted the X-Men with House and Powers, then it really kind of took more of a central focus, because you had that list of like the highest offenders to the mutant race, which included Cassandra Nova with the mass genocide on Genosha. You had the Scarlet Witch. You had, I think maybe Cameron Hodge.
Yep.
With the Sentinels. So you have like all of that stuff there. So I don't know if they ever really, like, if you're like me, an X-Men reader, and I wasn't a reader for a good chunk of time, but kind of coming out of that, they never really made her redeemed in that kind of sense. Cause I think even she and Rogue still were very standoffish in Uncanny Avengers. It was a very tentative truce, but in the Avengers world, like, it didn't matter. Like, she was better. Like, she kind of, like, they healed her. Like, she was, you know, she was at least in a better place. To your point, though, with the Darkhold and everything, like, a lot of that is comic accurate. C'thon, you know, essentially kind of
Wonder
putting
Gore,
a piece
C'thon,
of the...
all of that is true to the comics of sort. But again, I don't think she went full villain. other than her origins are a villain. So that does track, and that's how they introduced her in the second Avengers movie. Though, you know, really just kind of got caught up in all that. The heel turn in the comics, like you said, you're right, is Disassembled. And that was pretty bad. Like, you know, of course, all that's true. And then they did.
Still killed half the Avengers.
Yeah. And her husband. They did. And, you know, and that's interesting because now that you mentioned, I think she did, like, Hawkeye, of course, up.
Yep.
Like, he was dispatched. But I think, like, Jack of Cards gets, like, mutilated or something. It was pretty brutal. And if you go back and read
Disassembled, she ripped Vision in half.
Yeah, but he's android, whatever. Like,
synthesoid.
I guess it was just shocking because if you have seen, okay, so let's we're deep cutting, we're deep in the DMs of the Marvel MCU or the Marvel comics. If you are the casual like MCU fan and you've seen like WandaVision, you've seen all that stuff, I think the arc, and this is what I was talking about with the short arc, I think the arc from WandaVision into this is just like so quick down this horrible path that it doesn't really give her character much, like, it's just too quick for me. I really wanted to see her maybe be the first act villain and then something bigger. And that's a tried and true formula for, like, that kind of hero.
You want a redemption. You want, oh, I do. You want a redemption for her. And
always.
And there's a chance we might get one, but not for a while.
We thought we were getting that at the end of WandaVision. This is the only thing I'll say to that. We don't know how much time is from the end of WandaVision to this. She's been deep in that Darkhold for a while, including what's the walking, I can't think of what they call it in the movie.
Oh, dream walking.
Yes. I was gonna say day walking. She's not a drag queen out and doing a brunch show in the middle of the street. No,
she's not Blade, the daywalker.
Yeah, exactly. She's been doing a lot of that. So she has been as corrupted as like Sinister Strange, maybe not to that extent, but she's dove like headfirst into this because the grief, which we knew was the villain of WandaVision, was her grief, has now escalated to the point where it's now I will do anything to get my family back. I mean, she didn't really say anything about Vision, but she just wanted her kids. But I mean, I figured she could just rebuild Vision.
I was surprised by that, too. Like, she did mention Vision, like, about that one thing. I mean, like, it came up briefly, but yeah, then nothing at all. Like, no.
Probably because she knows that, well, Vision, she knows that white Vision is out there.
That Vision. She got closure. Vishon. She did get closure with Vision. That was the thing, is that whole... Sure. Final episode, she got to actually tell him goodbye, and I don't think, like, she didn't really tell her children goodbye, because, like, it was enough that she knew that they're going to cease to exist, but, like, what are you going to do to a child to be like, well, I'm never going to see you again, you're going to stop existing now, so she did, like, a long good night with them, but with Vision, she actually got to... She got closure with him, but she never got closure with her children effectively being wiped.
That makes sense. But I guess that's partly why. The other thing, and so all that bothered me, and I just as a fan of Scarlet Witch in certain respects, again, I don't know how Oral felt about this movie. I think we were chatting at one point, I think he enjoyed it. Mainly because obviously seeing Wanda as a badass is always gonna make him excited. But, like, I don't know. There was just dialogue problems. There was some, and I love the guy who wrote the script. Michael Waldron, at least the credited to write the script. I think it went through several rewrites and it may have had other people previous. But I love Loki. I thought his Loki TV series was fantastic. I was blown away that there was nothing to do with Kang at all. Even in a slightest little reference, there was nothing to do with the TVA. Nothing, any of that made that in, which... I get would have complicated and made it a little weird, but also like you're doing the same thing that even I honestly just watched Spider-Man No Way Home like a couple months ago on a flight. And I was surprised that barely made it like had a reference into this at all after what Strange did, although it does kind of build the case that he's the most dangerous and all that. Do we understand the third eye thing? Because I'm like, it's evil. And it's evidently a fan of rock music. And I get the third eye is like a cultural mystical reference, but the fact that it came out of the Darkhold and that Sinister Strange had it. But then at the end, as he's running off to fight with to help Clea fix an incursion, like it pops up and he's like, yeah, fuck yeah, rock and roll. It was a weird, like, I'm like, so is this a good thing then? You're like having rock music in your head now? Is this a great power you've inherited? Like, what is this? I don't know.
It's,
and that's like
it's
an
a
open
callback.
Question.
It's a reference to the Jason Aaron run, where when you remember they had established where he's been using magic for so long, for so many different things constantly, it changed his body. So this just this does seem more linked to the Darkhold and him overusing dark magic, even if it's for a good reason. So it seems like they're pulling a little bit of his body's undergoing changes from his, like I said, even though he's doing good things, he's going to have consequences at some point.
I guess the consequence was like, you get a third eye. Oh, darn. And you like rock music now. Like, I don't know. It was very like, that's it. I'm sure it'll be followed up when they do another movie. I get that it's a teaser-y kind of like just to whatever excite you for what's to come. But as far as like a cost, I really thought it was going to do so. They were going to go somewhere way different. I felt like they were going to have more about him being teased, not teased, but like longing for Christine and being in a world where he could be with Christine. They didn't do anything with that really. Like they set these little red herrings or these little possibilities up and then they didn't pay him off. They even made
The Christine thing was him getting closure on that. That was the whole thing because that it circled around from the question where she asked him at her wedding, are you happy? And it circles back to Kamar-Taj where at towards the end, where America is practicing with the rest of the sorcerers. And he asks Wong or Wong asks him. It's a full circle moment where he finally is able to not be pining after her. Because he realizes like the whole thing with that. The other thing I will just mention about the third eye, I've been watching, I take to watching new Rockstars videos because Eric Voss puts together like great videos. Apparently there is that was an edited and an alternate cut of that post-credit scene. There was a longer one where it actually implies that Sinister Strange has dreamwalked into our Stephen Strange's body, and that's actually Sinister Strange. Ew. Because if Sinister Strange's third eye opens up after he's impaled when he's thrown from the sanctum and like Christine's outside, his third eye opens up and it kind of implies that he's not dead and they kind of leave him for dead there. So it's supposed to kind of be a reference back to Sinister Strange. Whether or not they continue with that or just make it be like, oh, because he's used the Darkhold and he bonded with the spirits of the damned, because, you know, obviously when they made that fabulous cape and flew him up to Mount Wundagore. Yeah.
I love that. I will say I'm glad we're kind of going through this. And I knew this would happen, but I did really appreciate that. Was very Raimi-esque, but also just delightfully comic book to have this cape made of the spirits of the damned. Like that whole thing was that the ending, other than Wanda having to sacrifice and all that, other than that, I did like that touch and possessing if you've seen the trailer and you know that there is a zombie Strange, you think that the bad guy is zombie Strange, and then you're like, oh my god, no, this is a totally different turn. There's a game called Inside where you kind of take control of these little
God, that fucking game.
Yeah, and so I was reminded of that too. All that to say, you didn't hate the movie.
You're talking about Mario Odyssey.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Where you have to supplant the consciousness of another being and take it over.
Yep, all of that. Like, Possession's a great game gimmick. I did enjoy the movie. Mostly, I think I just was heightened in certain ways that I just thought didn't work for me. And I would love to see where they're going next with this, because there's a lot of directions. I hope we see more of the Illuminati somehow. I don't know how, or at least those other, I'm talking about Mr. Fantastic and whatnot. Like, I'd love to see them properly in the 616. And maybe people are right. We're going to Battle World. We're going to get Secret Wars. I don't know. This is like, there is no one overarching thing so far, other than maybe the multiverse for this phase four. I'm curious where they're going to start to direct that. Maybe with this next Thor movie, we'll figure that out. I doubt. I don't know. Yes, all of that. That's how I felt about this movie.
BJ, what were some areas of improvement for you?
Fuck Christine. Fuck her. Fuck her out the ass. I'm fucking sick to death.
Steven was trying to.
Of romantic interests in movies that have no real reason to be there. Like, they have set up this wonderful story, and they touched on it throughout this entire movie of Steven, first of all, having to always be the one to solve everything. He has to be the one being to hold the knife, which means, but is he one the one willing to make the sacrifice? And I find it very telling that the Illuminati was more worried about Stephen Strange, because they're right. A lot of Stephen Stranges keep getting corrupted or fucking up. However, they also, Stephen, there wasn't enough credit given to that version of Wanda that got dreamwalked into, who's just living her fucking life. So it's one of those things where she clearly still has some power, but she's just living her life. She has decided to just be with her family. Whether or not Vision is the father, or whether or not she created them with magic, it seems like she didn't.
It's Mephisto.
I mean, could be. but it's one of those things where, like, they even left the first Doctor Strange movie off on the fact that Mordo was completely disillusioned with everything, because he's just like, we don't have the right to rewrite reality and fuck with things because we can. Like, at some point, you have to just accept things you can't change, even if you're using your power for a good reason. Like, in the long run, where do we draw the line? And they even had a chance to even push that narrative even more, because you've got Wanda, who has the power to kind of take what she wants. But should she?
Oh my god. Did you hear about the scene that was cut at the beginning of the film?
Oh.
Where our Mordo goes after Wanda because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And she decapitates him and then presents Mordo's head to Strange in the app, like, at some point. I don't know if it was the Apple Field or not, but yeah, she in the first draft, or in the first, they ended up cutting that scene from the beginning of the movie where she ends up killing and beheading Mordo and then presenting it to Strange. Because exactly that, he goes after her because she is using her power that way.
And my thing, it makes Mordo so much more compelling, giving him this sort of mission to, like, correct things, or, like, to create a order to this sort of thing, because the organization he thought that gave order isn't. He's just like, so we're just fine with breaking all the rules then, even though he dedicated his life to following the rules, which is something I can 100% understand being fucking pissed about. So it's one of those things where, when do we, you've got a universe that Steven walked into where they're just like, you fucked up too much. You know, you've got that same universe where they're just like, whatever, Wanda's just some little witch. Like, and it's telling, where you have what seems to be the only version of Wanda they've shown so far that goes complete, that just decides, like, I'm going to take what I want because I have the power to take what I want. And I just felt like they wasted so much time on this, like, how do you feel about losing Christine? That being said, I love Night Nurse Christine in the Illuminati universe. She was the most interesting version of that character, and they could have literally left her parts in the movie, and that whole thing with Steven kind of wanting, lamenting his past, that message would have been best served with just that time frame. You didn't need to spend as much time as they did on it. You didn't even have to have him go to the wedding. So that was.
I disagree, because him pulling the cape out of his pocket square.
Oh my god.
Because again, one of the best characters in any Doctor Strange movie will always be the cape.
True.
The cape, absolutely. The cape was ridiculous. Can I ask a couple dumb questions? So I think one of them was answered. I didn't remember what happened to Mordo in the first film, but it sounds like he's still running around. The cape, Wanda, like, shoots a thing at the cape. And it, like, it looked like it was kind of like her trying to, like, follow them. And then it was just like, nope, it's got a hole. You got to patch the hole. I'm like, really? That's all
it was?
That
just like
was
a fireball.
Yeah, but I felt like that was like a, it could have done a different, they could have gone a different direction, and maybe that was like a leftover bit from a previous draft. Because like, you don't put a gun out there, even a fireball like that, and you show it actually like hitting without there being a reason. And then the only reason I could tell is, oh, there's a hole in his cape, and then Christine had to patch it. Like, I'm like, that's it? Like, it's just, I don't know. That was a very odd like incongruity that I thought was like, just like said, a leftover bit from something they had thought of and didn't use. But yeah, I don't know.
But that was honestly, that's like my only real complaint, is the fact that like, I feel like they just spent too much time on Christine when she was the least interesting part of the first movie. I'm like, why are you shoveling Christine into her face?
Like, because Christine is such a huge part of Strange. That's why. I get it, but no, it is. I mean, honestly, look at What If. There's an entire fucking episode based off of Christine being murdered in different ways. Because in that universe, she was a nexus point. She was a fixed point in time. Her death was essential to the fabric of time. Otherwise, when he tried to stop it, incursions were happening, which was that melty bit, which was mimicked again. Like Brian had pointed out with some of like with Captain Carter and some of these bits from What If making their way into, including the voice of Ultron. The Ultron bots were the Ross guy that voiced Ultron in What If did the voice for the Ultron bots in this movie. But Strange is a narcissist that also has this obsession with Christine. I understand that so much of this is about Wanda and that journey, and then America and her journey, but it's still a Strange film at its core. So I can understand why that you needed that wedding scene, even though it may have in some ways felt like it was taking up time that other stories could have been told. But if you didn't have that part, you don't have him coming full circle to the end and saying, hey, like kind of getting that closure in and of itself. My biggest thing, honestly, was the pacing. That the beginning of the film felt very disjointed, and the tone and the storytelling did not feel like it was paced properly to tell the story the way that it needed to. That was my biggest thing, in addition to what you guys have mentioned.
You know
already.
To me, it felt like, while I love Sam Raimi and I love his Raimi touches throughout the movie, I think a little bit more focus on making it more of a dark fantasy, more similar to Army of Darkness versus Evil Dead. I feel like making it more, if Raimi had focused more on making it a dark fantasy, I think people would have probably appreciated the darker elements a bit more, because you're right. There are some slight moments where it breaks, like that whole dark, like horror feel. It breaks, but it doesn't, like, it's not a reprieve. It's like a completely different movie for like 5-10 minutes, and then you're back into it. That's exactly where I see it. And that's the risk you run when you do a tonal change. Cause like,
yeah, for sure.
Thor had a massive tonal change between Thor 2 and Thor 3, and it was for the better. And I feel like, if they don't use Sam Raimi for another Doctor Strange project or anything like that, I definitely think they need to think about pursuing somebody that's done like a dark fantasy versus just a flat out horror. But no, I 100% on the either the tone or the pacing, like had this weird moment where it just like shifted the movie.
Yeah, for sure. So let's wrap it up with a final possible conjecture. Moments, things, something that we may want to see coming out of the rest of Phase 4. There's a lot of faith-based portions to like the television shows with the Duat, the ancestral plane, a lot of like afterlife moments in the television portion, and even into like with Black Panther 2 coming with the ancestral plane. Like a lot of these pieces have faith-based elements, a lot of them have multiversal elements. What is something that you could see or want to see coming down the pipeline in Phase 4? Either of you can start this.
So for me, I definitely, one, I'm excited we're getting Clea. Because Clea was always a Doctor Strange character that was super interesting to me. She's super talented. She's definitely more than a match for Strange. Casting, perfect. So I'm interested in seeing that, but I'm also interested in them pursuing more of this storyline of Strange kind of building up either body modifications or consequences to his somewhat frivolous use of magic. Because that out of that in the comic comes Mr. Misery, and Mr. Misery is one of my favorite Doctor Strange villains. He is like a Cronenberg Marvel nightmare, and I love him. I would also like to see a potential Strange Academy series or movie, because kind of with all this faux pas with magic, we're building up a case for either Kamar-Taj or somebody to create something for young magic users. And I definitely hope that Wanda just kind of spirited away into self-exile, kind of what she did after, was it after House of M? It was House of M, or I think it was Disassembled, where she just, everybody thought she was dead, and she was just like, you know, fucking Hawkeye in an apartment in Soho. So because I think she's supposed to make an appearance in Agatha House of Harkness, is the current thing. So I don't think she had a very Marvel death. So I would like it if we did kind of see her in self-exile and start kind of rebuilding and thinking of ways to, fix or at least not cause harm anymore. And we may not even see her cast another spell, and I'd be fine with that as long as we get to see the character actually build towards something positive. So those are the things that I want in my speculations.
Brian, any wild conjecture?
Oh man, I don't even know. I would love it if they're going to do Battle World. They're going to really go pull full Hickman here. I doubt that. That's just way too crazy, though. It does give them the ability to like bring the Wanda from that other 838 universe as like the, yeah, well, you didn't kill a bunch of people. We'll bring you over and you can be our Wanda now. And by the way, bring your kids, because then we can have the Young Avengers. Like, I think that's the easiest path there. Not that it's like the most well-earned, but it works. It kind of makes some sense. And it kind of gives a weird clean slate, because she wouldn't have had Vision. So maybe the clean slate Wanda and the clean slate Vision can like reunite with West Coast Avengers. Like, I'd be all about that. But with Doctor Strange, I just want to see, him get Sorcerer Supreme, as much as I do love that Wong is Sorcerer Supreme. I do want him to at least get the title, you know, at some point. Like, did he have it in the first movie for like a hot second and then he lost it? Is that what it was?
Yeah, oh, okay. He blipped. So Wong took over in the 5 years that he was gone.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, so then there we go. They checked that box. I love BJ's idea. The Hickman or the Jason Aaron. Magic has a cost. I can't keep doing this the way I've been doing it, because it's a limited resource. Give him the axe, let him go crazy, fight Mr. Misery, but with Klee somehow in there. And then honestly, I love what they've done with the comics, where they basically made Klee the new Sorcerer Supreme. Not that I'm reading those comics, but I love the idea of it. Hopefully the execution's good. So I'm fine with all that.
Or the I forgot to mention this, the Magistrate, the anti-magic.
That was okay.
I hope that's the universe that's having the incursion in the Dark Dimension. That would be cool.
Yeah.
I liked them.
I like the idea, but I don't want to see the Doctor Strange series go full on like sci-fi. It's borderline enough, I think, with what it's doing. It needs to stay.
But I would definitely like a magic versus science argument pop up sort of thing. Sure. Because especially since they've kind of treated Asgardian like abilities as almost like there's most of them are scientific instead of magic. So I just like to see kind of that butt heads a bit. I definitely don't want to see it overtake the narrative. No, you're absolutely right. Because Doctor Strange as a sci-fi narrative does not work for me. So, yeah.
I want to see it go full trippy in the Dark Dimension with Clea. And I want to see Battle World. Like if we get to Battle World, that'd be fucking awesome.
We need Doom to have Battle World done right. This would be so much better.
We're talking like phase five. Like I'm talking phase five going into phase six. Like we could set this up. We've got the bones. Let's do this right. Well, dear listeners, why don't you tell us what you think about Doctor Strange 2 in the comments on our social media? Email us. We'd love to hear from you. We will be back in 1 week after this for our next pop culture roundup. It's our big 300th episode. So check back in with us. 300 episodes of Flame On for you to enjoy. Check out our website at flameonshow.com. And you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/flameonshow. We'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Hola.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.